Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, I'm Penn.
And I'm Kim Holderness.
And you've stumbled upon the Holderness Family Podcast. Thank you so much for choosing to download or stream this. It means a whole lot to us.
And if you had started this podcast about 30 seconds earlier, you would have heard us fighting about how to start this podcast.
Right.
So welcome.
Well, I mean, was I recording? I feel like we could let them hear that. I'm worried that I didn't press record in time. Anyway, so listen, we're in for a treat today. And so I'm a sports nerd, right? I've wanted to have an athlete or some kind of like sports person on this podcast forever. And I understand that like not everybody is a sports fan. So Kim found me one that is also a motivational speaker.
Well, so he's more than that, right? Yeah. He's more than athlete. This is JJ Burden. He's a former NFL player turned motivational speaker. He talks about reaching your potential even and especially when you're the underdog. He also has some amazing insights into marriage, fatherhood. He has raised 8
Wow.
Children.
What's up with these big families? We had Charlie a couple of weeks ago. He was like 12 kids.
Yes.
Right?
And so, and JJ talks very openly about how those children came into his life, 3 biological children, 5 nieces and nephews that he adopted. So he has caught touchdown passes from Joe Montana.
Yep.
He was one of the smallest players in the NFL.
I've got something for him on that too.
5'10", 157 pounds, which apparently that seems huge to me, but that's small for NFL.
I'm going to geek out about that a little bit later because if he played right now, he would have 16 touchdowns. We're going to talk about that later just because they've changed the game.
Okay.
But I'm not going to nerd out about that too much. Anyway, but I have some questions for him on on kind of how to reach your potential. We always talk about that. And there is a little bit of conversation about like how hard you can push to get to where your potential is, especially I want to ask him about Simone Biles. I want to ask him about how to balance mental health with peak performance. So I got all kinds of questions for him.
Should we just get right to it?
Yeah, he's been listening to us this whole time, which is the best part. Hi, JJ.
Hey, what's up, Pan? How are you guys doing?
Well, thank you for listening to us ramble on. Thank you for listening to us fight about how we're going to start this podcast.
Right. I felt like we did a good job starting it.
JJ,
how did you feel about our intro?
I've done probably thousands of podcast interviews. That was probably the most unique and special intro kind of witness.
That is a backhanded compliment if I've ever heard one.
Unique. Yes.
Special.
Special. Well, first of all, there's so many different things we want to talk to you about, but I think top of mind right now as a mom to an athlete, and you've raised kids, I'm sure there was some athletics in there too. I am very inspired right now by watching Simone Biles. And I know, so how am I getting it into this? As a motivational performance coach and an athlete where you were in a field where only 6% of high school seniors go on to play college football, you were an underdog and your message has been to like fight, dig deep, break through. And then we have somebody like Naomi Osaka, Simone Biles saying, you know what? I need to pump the brakes. I need to step out. Like, this is what's best for me. How do you balance and teach that? Like, when are the times you do need to keep pushing even though you don't feel like it? And when are the times you need to step out, and how do you know the difference?
Well, I think the first thing is that, and most athletes, especially at that level, they have this automatically. And then obviously younger athletes have to be trained and taught this, but they have to know that they have to be their most trusted, reliable mentor, coach, accountability partner, meaning that they know when they're on and they know when they're off. And as I look at the situation with Simone, I mean, here's a pro. She's performing at the highest level, and she recognizes there's a weakness in her game. She recognizes mentally she's not there. So she's kind of throwing out that signal, hey, guys, I'm not okay. And it's between her and our coaches making that decision. But that's where just being able to trust your instincts and know, because I know that there were some games where I was on.
Yeah.
And there were some games I know there I was off. Mm-hmm. NFL's a little different, though, because you don't get off days. You got to figure out a way to get it done or you lose your job, you know. So in most cases, it's really having a good support system to be able to help you, coach you through those moments. But athletes, parents, and people, they have to listen to someone when they say, I'm not right. I'm getting the signals here. I need to take a step back.
And I'm not an athlete. I'm a middle-aged mom. I have trouble knowing when to trust. What's my gut telling me, let's not do this? And what's just my normal anxiety, depression, something that I deal with. So do you work with that at all? Like, what is the difference between trusting my gut and what is something like, oh, wait, I'm just scared to do this?
Yeah. What I usually tell people to do is like, trust your history. You know, look at your history. You know, what has your journey been thus far? You know, how have you responded in these situations in the past? Did you rise above or did you give up and throw in the towel? And I'm hoping that we can figure out the pattern that's always caused them to rise above so that they know it. In some of these situations, right now, mentally, you're just dealing with some negative thoughts that we can overcome.
Yeah.
You know, but then there's sometimes when the gut, when you know, like, because there's some days when I know, okay, I'm not on today, mm-hmm. and I have to step away. I got to recharge, refocus, turn my phone off, you know? So I think it's through experience, you kind of develop the habit and know when you're on and when you're off.
I mean, it's interesting because I think it always has been a binary thing. It's either rise above or throw in the towel. It's a one or a zero. It doesn't feel binary anymore, mm-hmm. especially like learning more about athletes and mental health. It's not just these Olympians. It's not Naomi Osaka. DeMar DeRozan's talked about it. Like, professionals have spoken more openly about mental health in the last few years. And it didn't used to be that way, JJ. Like, you couldn't, I don't think in the 90s when you were running across the middle, catching buddy passes, you know, and even then, like, you would have a concussion back then and you would have to get back out on the court, on the field. Am I wrong?
Oh, you're correct. You weren't allowed to show mental weakness, so to speak. You weren't allowed to be afraid or to make up excuses. You had to figure it out and get in there and do your job because there was so much pressure on you to perform, to keep your job. Use an example of concussions. I mean, I had, I don't know how many concussions in games, and there were times when I didn't tell the coaches mm-hmm. because I knew that there was a chance I would lose my job. I wouldn't be able to play. I couldn't take care of my family. So you just had to hide those things and you just figured out a way to do it. Now, obviously we're finding out some of the consequences of that today.
Right.
But I like that it's coming to the forefront because I saw athletes at the highest level, guys. I saw them mentally check out. And these were the guys you never heard of. They didn't make the team, but because they were struggling up there. So it's nice that people are starting to be, or athletes are making everyone more aware of mentally, you know, they have some challenges as well.
I'm not an athlete. I'm not going to perform at the level of Simone Biles ever in my life, ever. But I can look back as a new mom. I had my son on December 23rd. I was called into a meeting on December 28th and I went to it. I mean, because I was like, oh my God, they're going to fire me if I don't go.
I'm going to jump in. And you didn't just go to a meeting. You shot a video.
Yeah.
Like, five days after, your parts were still, that's the wrong term.
My items had shifted during flight. Right. I was still wearing like those like mesh underwear. It was disgusting.
No, I drove you there, I remember.
He was sitting in the car with the baby so I could like every 45 minutes nurse him. That's what I'm saying. Like it, even in the, as most, just in the last few years, there was this thing like, if you don't show up, you're going to get fired. I was definitely dealing with some like postpartum depression, anxiety. And it was like, well, that doesn't matter. You have to work. You have to show up. So I love that my kids are getting the message that, yes, like you perform well, you work hard, you dig deep, but also step, like it's okay. It's not a one or a zero. You can take a break. I hope that our kids learn that.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I try to teach to individuals is that you're going to have these moments, and sometimes it can kind of turn into a pity party, and you got to figure it out. Am I just feeling sorry for myself, or do I really have something I'm dealing with? And sometimes people are just scared and they're feeling sorry for themselves. And I'll say, you can have your pity party, but don't hang out that party too long, because if you do, it's hard to leave.
Right.
Right.
You end up staying there too long, and then that really affects you in the long run.
And I think that applies for sure. I mean, we definitely got out in the open, like, our concerns about mental health. But, I mean, it's not like we're going to sit around and do nothing because of all this. We actually have, like, friends that we know who have been so crippled by either anxiety or depression that they couldn't get out of their room. So like that's also an issue, right? I'm imagining with you as an athlete, and also, you know, anyone who is an athlete, rejection, injury, like those sorts of things you learned a lot from on how to get back off the mat. So moving away from, okay, I don't have a major mental health issue. I'm just feeling rejected. I'm feeling injured. There is a setback. What's your message there?
My message is always like asking three simple questions. Why did this happen? What can I learn from it? And how can I turn it into an opportunity? And what I try to infuse in people that, yeah, you're going to have these moments in life. And I have this acronym called FASCO: failures, adversities, setbacks, challenges, and obstacles. Okay. When they happen, we have to develop the habit of conquering them. The first way is you have to recognize these are some of your best mentoring moments. These are some of the best moments to learn about yourself and really see how bad you really want it. And so by asking those three questions, there's something you can learn. Okay, why did this happen? You know, if you're being honest, we know why. You know, what can I learn from it? If we're being honest, we should learn something. And then how can I turn it into opportunity? So it's getting them to recommit and take advantage of this setback, because every setback is a perfect opportunity for a comeback, right?
And doesn't it suck that in life you don't really learn a lot when you win right away? You don't learn a lot when you get the first job you apply for. Like, does that suck?
You really, what you really want to do is come up just a little bit short, but learn a valuable lesson along the way.
Even if you're not, you know, an athlete, but as a, like, I'm a mom raising a daughter who plays tennis competitively, and just the nature of it is you have to lose a lot to learn, and you don't really learn from those matches you win. It's unfortunate.
We're totally going to use those three questions. That makes good sense, because, and so JJ, our daughter wants to play college tennis. I mean, her main goal is to play Division I, which is an insanely difficult thing to do. There's only so many people who are at that level, but the fact that she has that goal is wonderful. But we've noticed, because she's gotten into this kind of tournament sphere, and I'm sure that you're familiar with this, not only with you, but with your kids, where the progression is not linear. There's ups, and then there's like serious dips until you get to the next up, and then serious dips. And during those dips, it's the higher she gets, the more intense the anxiety and the pain and the, you know, all of that pressure comes. And so having those three simple questions are easy. Have you experienced any of that with your children, or I'm sure with yourself? And what's the difference between experiencing as yourself and experiencing as a parent?
Yeah, I think there's two dynamics there. I think, because I'm wired different. I mean, because you don't make it to the NFL by accident. You know,
it's you got
to
work.
It's, you know, what is it? 1,696 men are on an NFL roster. So I'm a little, obviously, a different guy. And I have to kind of temper that with my children, you know, and my wife, too. So I will try to just put those points out there. And Penn, if I don't see them respond, then I won't I won't push them too much because I know a lot of this has to be internal. Jesse, with your daughter, she wants to go to that level. Great. Let's see if she's willing to commit physically, willing to commit mentally, willing to commit in her preparation. And let's see how she responds to those times when she loses, you know. And if I see my children, they're not responding properly and they're not willing to learn and take that next level, I will back off. And I will really back off and let them just kind of go at their own pace, because not everyone is meant to play college tennis or be a college pro. So you're looking for those signs to see that, okay, this person has the ability to go all the way, or this person, yeah, I don't know. I need to be careful here.
Well, my issue as a mom is, I think, so she'll lose, she'll cry in the car for about 30 seconds, and then she's like, okay, put me back out. And she had a shoulder injury, and I was like, no, your shoulder's hurt. She's like, nope, I did. No, it doesn't hurt. No, it does. I'm like, no, it's actually hurting. No, you're not playing. And so she gets if she had a concussion, she wouldn't tell me about it. She had a shoulder injury, she wouldn't admit to it. So she's a little determined is a really nice word for what she has right now. And whereas I am, look, Simone Biles pulled out. And she needed to do this for her mental health. Maybe you should take a break and go be a teenager and go to the pool. And she's like, no, I would
run. We got into this argument about whether or not she should go to a tournament last weekend. One of us wanted to take her. One of us did not want her to go. And
I did not want her to go. I'm like, you just chill out. Go to the pool. Be a kid. And
we did end up listening to her. She wanted to go. She had a great tournament. And then she got sick because I was sick and I gave it to her. So
not COVID. We had everybody tested. Yeah.
Well, JJ's not going to get COVID from us. He's on a Zoom call.
I know, but like,
why do we feel the need to explain to people on COVID that we're not on Zoom calls that we're not contagious?
Well, no, but if you have a cold right now, I judge everybody who has a cold.
Yes, it's just funny that we've gotten to the point now where I've done this before. I've told people on Zoom calls, "Don't worry, we're good," and I'm like, "What the frick am I doing right now?"
That's good. You guys might be the first one that's mentioned in a podcast.
It's the truth.
So, and then, you know, our son, bless, he's 11 and like he's 11, right? So it doesn't matter. Like he loves to play basketball, but like the moment he has a bad game, he would rather just not keep playing. And we're fine with that. Like basketball does not need to be, it can be something fun you do. You don't even have to play competitively. His team will lose and then he'll just go inside and pout for a while. So I'm like, that's fine. You know what I mean? So I'm never going to encourage him to like, I'm like, you could practice more, but I'm not going to sit there and force him out there. We aren't those people.
That's good. That's such good parenting when it comes to raising children who are active in sports. Cause I've seen just the opposite. And it doesn't work out well. So that's good. You're given that, being flexible there.
What does the opposite look like?
Oh my goodness. You stop crying. Get in there and get those 30 shots in, you know, or go study that film, or the things that I've seen some parents at very young ages, like pushing their children to do athletically. It's just really disappointing. Cause at the end of the day, if it's not in their heart, and if it's not natural, at some point, they're not going to want to do it. And it could be in grade school, it could be junior high, it could be high school, and parents have to be okay with that. And I think that's what my wife, Raina, and I, we made a decision early on. We're just going to go with the flow of the children, and we're not going to push them. We're going to let them do what they want to do. And I remember seeing my oldest son, LeJordan Jr., who's playing soccer when he was young. Oh, and he hated it. And I was watching him, and I was like, okay, we're not going to be pushing him.
We're done with that.
And yeah. So you, when you graduated high school, you were 5'9 and 133 pounds. Mm-hmm. Okay. You did not get a scholarship, but you ended up at track at Oregon.
Yeah. So I didn't get offered a football scholarship. I was the number one wide receiver in the state, but I ended up getting a track scholarship.
Okay. All right, I'm going to geek out on him now.
Okay.
Just like,
but you, by can the take, way, like 5'9 and 133 pounds. Yeah. Like I think I weigh 133 pounds and I'm 5'4. So I feel like that was small. Okay.
So if you guys aren't football fans, you can check out here for a minute, but I'm just going to explain something because I think this context is important when we're talking to JJ. When he was playing, this was in the 90s, all right? He had Joe Montana throwing him passes. That's good. That's a good quarterback throwing him passes. Congratulations on that. However, the NFL looked completely different 30 years ago, to the point that if you're JJ and you catch the ball across the middle, they are aiming for the crown of your head. Not just like accidentally hitting it. That's how you're supposed to tackle people, is head-to-head combat. Yeah. Okay? So a lot of the wide receivers, by definition, had to be taller just so that people wouldn't hit them in the head. That was part of it. The other part was that there was a lot of running in the NFL, and then there was passing to the outside, and you could occasionally throw it to a tight end. Offense has completely changed to the point that there's a new position called an X that everybody has, even in high schools now. And that is a smaller, shiftier person who acts as basically a running back who catches passes. There weren't any of these in the NFL. Now every team has one or two of them. A lot of times, like the punt returner, your old team, the Chiefs, the best wide receiver in the NFL is JJ's size. His name is Tyreek Hill.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And because of the new rules...
How do you know all this? What do you do at night? I had no idea you knew any of this stuff.
I'm impressed. He's impressing me.
I have no idea if he knew any of this stuff.
If they had an X position when JJ was there, it was extremely radical. It's now in every offense. So the fact that a 5'10" person played 8 seasons and caught 9 seasons, caught double-digit touchdowns in the NFL is completely unheard of. So I just want to make sure that, like, it's even more impressive than you think it is. So my question to you, JJ, is how did you get in the damn NFL as a wide receiver? It does not compute looking back at those old teams.
Well, you know what? It was never planned. It was never a goal. It was never a dream. It just kind of happened. And quick version is, so I was at Oregon on a track scholarship, and because all the football program said I was too small. My second year at Oregon, I started secretly watching the football practices because I wanted to know, are these guys that much bigger than me in college? And after a couple of days of watching the Oregon practices, I was like, okay, I can do this. Somehow I got to get on the field. So the very next day, I went and stood on the practice field because you're not supposed to be on the practice field, but I figured somebody's going to kick me off and they're going to know why I'm here. So Rich Brooks, the head coach, he sees me, comes all the way down to the field where I was. And he says, you're the track kid. I saw you in the stands. He goes, what are you doing here? I go, coach, I want to play. So we just kind of went back and forth. He's like, you're too small. I was like, no, just give me a shot. And I twisted his arm enough that he finally said, okay, I'll check with the track coaches. If they approve it, I'll let you walk on. I'll let you try out. So that fall, I walked on. And that's all I wanted to do, was just show these guys that I could play. And 2 weeks later, I made the team. And so I thought, okay, let's be a two-sport athlete at Oregon for 4 or 5 years, and that's what I did. But my heart was on track. I qualified for the 1980 Olympic trials in the long jump.
Oh, wow.
So that was the focus. And then one day out of the blue, I get this call, and I'm like, hello? And they go, hey, is JJ there? I go, yeah, who is this? This is head coach Marty Schottenheimer. We just drafted you in the NFL draft. I was like, who is this? Are you serious?
Wow.
You know, because I didn't have great stats. I had one touchdown at Oregon. I had 19 catches my senior year. And Penn, you probably know, that's not NFL caliber stats.
I mean, unless you're a big special teams player, or they saw you as a returner, I'm guessing that's what it was. But I don't know.
I think I think I was this mystery track guy who could actually catch the ball and had great speed.
Can't coach speed.
Curiosity, yeah. You know? So anyway, so I get this call and I'm thinking, well, I'm getting ready for nationals. I'm going to NCAAs. I'm going to Olympic trials. But let me go to this rookie camp for the Browns next week, just to say I went there and checked it out. So I go the next week to the Browns rookie camp. And the third practice, I tear up my ACL ligament in practice.
No.
That sucks. Yeah. And back then, you couldn't bounce back in six months with cadavers and stuff, right? Like that was
It was pretty devastating. And before I left, Bill Dillinger, the track coach, he goes, hey, you're going to score a lot of points at NCAAs. Don't do any drills. And I go, Bill, I never get hurt at these things, you know? Ooh. So, you know, you kind of have this invincibility complex sometimes as pro athletes. So anyway, so that's what happened. I'm thinking like, well, I can't do track and I got to sit on IR for the Browns for a year. Let's see what happens. So that year, that was the turning point because I sat on the bench watching practice, going to meetings, study, evaluating the talent. And at that point was when I had a mind shift and I thought, I can play in the NFL. I just got to get healthy and learn how to play at that level. And that's what happened. And I got cut by the Browns and with the Dallas, and then they didn't want to bring me back, but I eventually signed up with the Chiefs. And I took it year after year after that. But the one thing I always teach people in this thing is that, you know, in life, we all have those moments where we can have a breakthrough. And when that knee injury, that was my first serious injury. And I had a decision to make. Either that could take me out or take me to bigger and better things. And I said, this is going to be my moment. And I put in a lot of work, guys. And never in a million years, I think I'd play 9 years and end up in the huddle with Joe Montana. So he could turn out all right.
I have to say, I'm very impressed by all of the football things that he just said. I'm very impressed. I'm very impressed with you, JJ, for having that breakthrough moment. One of the things I'm most impressed with, the fact that you've been married for 30 years. Holy moly. Your high school sweetheart or college sweetheart?
College sweetheart, and it's 31 years.
Oh, well, and congratulations.
And he shared this with us in the beginning when we were arguing about how to start the show. I cannot believe this looking at you because you're definitely younger than me. And if you're not, you just look younger than me. You're a granddad. Is that right?
Yes, we have our first grandchild. He's two.
Congratulations.
River. And then we just found out they're pregnant with the second one. So we know number two's coming up soon.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so before we get to the kids, so what is, we wrote this whole book on marriage. We did all the work. We went to counseling. We've done all the things. But I am fascinated by people who make it work. So what is your, what's your advice for people, when they're in those valleys of marriage, because we all have them.
Oh, yeah, we definitely all have them. I think the thing I would share that I think has helped me a lot is not about me. You know, it's not about me.
That's good.
It's about her. And it's really focusing on my wife's emotional needs and what she needs. Because for so long, when I was in the NFL, it was about me. Our lives revolved around my career. And once that ended, it took me some time to figure that out, that it's not about you, it's about her. And I think when couples put the needs of their spouses ahead of their own, I think that's where the magic happens, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just, are they willing, are they committed to do that? You know, making that commitment. And yeah, I tell all the husbands, it's not about you, it's about her, you know?
How long did it take you to adjust to that after your career?
14 years.
Wow.
I mean, it literally took, because we got married in 90, which was my third year. I retired in 97. It was around 2006, Penn, that I finally, because, you know, we were going through that, you know, the peaks and valleys, and my career was over. And, you know, you just go through those moments. And I finally just, it snapped one day that, dude, it ain't about you anymore. It's about her. You got to do better and be there for her. Because little things like the emotional needs, because, you know, it takes us a while to figure out that it's not always physical. It's like, hey, help with the dishes. Hey, yeah. You know, it's help clean up. It's make things easier for her. Because what is that saying? When the wife's happy, everybody's happy.
Yeah.
Like that. Happy wife, happy life.
There you go.
Was there, because you remember the year very specifically, was there like an aha moment? Was there like something that happened is why you remember it so specifically?
Yeah, it was that year where it was that year where couples go through that year and they're like, man, are we going to make it?
Yeah.
You know, is this that, you know? And I think, you know, because some things are happening. And that's when I think a lot of couples will throw in the towel. But I think one thing Rain and I remembered, and I said this too, because I was raised in an environment where a lot of my uncles and relatives were all divorced. And I made a promise to myself that I was going to do whatever I can to stay married, mm-hmm. if possible, you know. And that was that year. And Kim, it was me looking in the mirror. I mean, I think we both have things to work on, but I was looking at myself and I was like, dude, I had to look in the mirror and say, you got to do better. You know, you got to do better as a father, as a husband, and just, and be there. And that's, for me, it was just more like, I keep saying this, but making it about her.
Yeah.
And I think as a professional athlete, and maybe one of the reasons why there's such a high divorce rate, everything always revolves around us. And I understand why, because we're under so much pressure. But even when the career is over, it's still, everyone's like, oh, you're this, you're, oh, you're that. And that can kind of get to your head. At some point, though, the reality has to set in that that career is over now. You know, it's, again, it's about you and your family and what can you do to contribute to a happy marriage.
I had a similar realization. And one of the things that helped me get through it was, at least this is what I believe, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm going to stick with it anyway. The pen before that realization wasn't necessarily a 100% selfish a-hole. He believed that it was his responsibility to carry the load and to be the main guy and to be the reason for success and the reason for stability. And I think a lot of men carry that weight. And when you realize that it works much better as a team, it works much better as a team.
When was the moment you realized that, Penn?
It was right around, I would say it was right around when we started getting counseling, but it was right around when you were having ideas and I feel like I was shooting them down. And you told me you felt like I felt like I was shooting your ideas down because I was in my head thinking, no, I got to do this. These are my ideas. And,
so around the time we started doing video stuff and business, I was like, you should quit your job. We should have our own company.
That was a great idea. And I did that. I think it was a little bit later on when you were attempting to do like bigger, grander things that seems like giant leaps that I didn't know that I would have much control over. And I think I remember like there was one December I was like, I'm just going to say something to you. And I think I said like, this year I'm going to be your champion. Like I'm going to have your back. I don't know if you remember this. I think it was at a restaurant or something. I was like, I'm going to it's time for these things to happen. Which I don't really even need to say, but I think I had to say it out loud to convince myself to do it. But just before that, I felt the need to be the, you know, creative monetary leadership hub of this family, which wasn't great for us because Kim has better ideas than I do. I should just shut up and listen to what she's saying.
I'm just going to take that last part and shut up and listen to what she's saying. Just like play that in the loop when.
Well, I've been working
on
that.
I'm kidding.
Like,
no.
Hey, I hope you recognize that. I've been working on that.
No, yeah. Yes. And it is hard to make some, there are moments when the hardest thing to do is make your partner a priority. Mm-hmm. There are moments when I wake up and I'm like, I just want to take care of myself right now. And I don't want to bring him coffee and I don't want to, but those, yeah, when you can acknowledge that and do that, I agree. That is like, it's a very hard thing to do, to make it about your partner, but it's very...
I like what you guys said. I really do, because, and there's probably, obviously, married couples listening to this, because that year, like what you asked, Penn, we had counseling that year, and what you just said, Kim, someone had to bring it to my attention. Mm-hmm. And I resisted it first, that I wasn't putting my wife first. I resisted. And then finally, just one day I was like, you know, but I struggled with the first couple sessions. I was like, no, you know,
right.
And then finally, I tried to humble myself and say, but that's, I think, when it was really a turnaround from my standpoint,
right.
You know,
so. Counseling is great. We can't say enough about it. The best thing our counselor ever told us was that your most important job in life is to be the audience to your loved one's story. To be their hype man, to be their hype person. So it sounds like you came to that same realization. And look at us. We're all still married.
We're
all still married.
Okay. I know your time is valuable, but I do need to acknowledge also, you are a recent, very recent empty nester, but you've had eight 8 children that you've helped raise.
Well, I'm doing the math. You had to get started early.
Well, so talk to us. So you were 3 biological children, but you're 5 nieces and nephews. And tell us, like, dang, what is your advice? I mean, here you are, this former pro athlete, this motivational speaker, but dang, there's got to been some, had to have been some days with those kids.
Oh yeah. Because this was all unexpected. You know, we had a little perfect family of 5, our 3 children, and everything's going good. And all of a sudden, you get a call from your nephew in Oklahoma that there's some problems. And, you know, 24 hours later, I fly out to Tulsa. Then 24 hours later after that, I'm in a courthouse. And the judge is like, we're going to take your 5 nieces and nephews and place them in 5 separate foster homes. You're the next of kin. What would you like to do? I mean, you want to talk about gut check. I mean, you want to talk about just... oh my goodness. But I'm like any smart husband. I was like, judge, let me call my wife first. Cause this is, you know, but what's cool is I called my wife from the courthouse and 5 minutes later, we just said, you know, she's like,
of course,
could you really sleep at night knowing you could have made a difference? And so we made that decision and it had its challenges when you're trying to mesh families like that. And the children were a variety of ages, but it took a lot of work, but yeah, we definitely had some wall kicking moments, but we came out all right, though.
I bet you could give a lot of advice to blended families.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I could. First mistake we made was when we brought the 5 nieces and nephew home, we moved everybody around the rooms. And we first had my 2 boys and then my daughter moved to our room. And then we took the nieces and nephews and they were in the same room. And we saw for like 6-7 months that dynamic was not happening. You said we're one big family, but everybody's kind of split up. And then we finally, when we moved to Arizona, we said, okay, let's change this up. And then we had the nieces with my daughter and then my sons kind of with the nephews. And that, I think, was when our family really started to flourish because I felt they finally believed they were truly part of our family.
JJ, now that we're friends, first of all, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to let you go. Your time, I know, is valuable. We have learned a ton today. Now that we're friends, I'm going to tell you, I am so happy at how sharp you are right now. And I'm saying this because it's been 25, 30 years since you're playing in the NFL. You're obviously taking care of yourself. The CTE thing scares the crap out of me for people who used to be in there, but it appears to not be affecting you because you are sharp as a tack. And I did a news story on it and I met a bunch of people who had been out of the league for about as long as you have. And it was a different story.
Yeah, no, thank you. And I will tell you, I have been diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment. But apparently the doctor said I'm okay. You know, I'm not in that high percentile. But
yeah. You know, doesn't that scare you?
It does. It really does. It just, yeah, you know.
But you're doing amazing things. As a husband and as a father, I feel like we could have a whole separate podcast about blending a family. And I do have to ask, my next question was going to be, okay, 8 kids. Do they listen to your motivation? Do they watch your speeches? Do they listen to you?
Well, my children, they used to tease me because they would hear me share things that they heard me say on keynotes and like, Allie's presenting to us. And then they'd laugh at me because they see me in the corner talking to myself. That was the big joke in the family is I would be presenting to myself, talking to myself. But you know, what's interesting, what's happening right now, like any parent knows, they didn't really listen. I mean, they listened to some degree, but a lot of them are now in their 20s and now they're all saying, oh my goodness, now I see why you were telling us this. Now I see why your mom was saying that. Now they're seeing the value of what we were sharing, but that's probably happens to every parent, you know?
No. Well, our son's 11 and he wants to learn how to edit and his 10-year-old cousin is teaching him how to use his like app to edit. I'm like, your dad is a professional editor. He's like, no. Cade knows better. And I'm like, he's 10. No, he doesn't.
He doesn't know better.
Yeah, so I hear you. I was just wondering. I'm like, oh, maybe his kids are different than ours.
No, no, they're not.
I think it's universal.
It actually makes me feel better.
Universally, kids reject everything we say. Okay, good to know. Well, I do thank you. Thank you for listening to us fight in the beginning of this. Thank you for sharing just all your wisdom and all you've learned. Where can people find you?
That would be on my website, jjburden.com. And, you know, from finding out about my speaking or motivational content or even my book too. And I'm all over social media. I'm very active on social media. I love to engage with others as well. So yeah, definitely follow me and send a quick direct hello.
That's okay. Burden, B-I-R-D-E-N.
Yeah, and we'll link to all of that as well. So thank you, JJ.
Yeah, and hey, let me just say this, and thank you to you as well. I just want to let you know how much I appreciate the fun, positive content you guys share, because we need a lot of that, because there's some crazy stuff on social media, but it's nice to know when I go to your pages, I'm going to smile.
You make me
thank
feel
you so
good.
Much. And thank while you're you. Talking about positive stuff, what's the name of the TikTok girl we need JJ to get onto?
Oh, with the rugby player?
It's the best part of the Olympics right now. She is a rugby player, and she is hysterical. And she's been TikToking throughout.
Alona Maher.
I-L-O-N-A-M-A-H-E-R.
Anyway, she's anyway.
Yeah, you got to check her out.
And she's a beast. Anyway, you're the best. I'm so glad we got to connect, because I have been following you on social media. So it's nice to like hear your voice and have a conversation. And so when all this pandemic stuff is over, I'd love to be able to hang out.
Yeah. And my wife says hello, and she said she's working up. So she said, tell them I'm one of their biggest fans.
Oh, that's so sweet. I love your wife. Okay. Thank you so much. And thanks for putting up with our technical issues. Okay. Right. Have a good day.
All right.
I'm
going to
hit stop here.
You're going to hit stop?
Hitting stop.
Sure.
Oh, wait, it wasn't recording.
He's kidding.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.